Growing Healthy Pigs podcast.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the Growing Healthy Pigs podcast. This is the podcast for pig farmers who are interested in hearing about the latest tech updates, industry news, and practical advice on pig health.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing what impact the global outbreaks of African swine fever and COVID-19 have had on the pig industry, and we'll be introducing the first of our new Growing Healthy Pigs farm ambassadors, Michael Baker. He'll be talking about his biosecurity plan and giving you his top tips for biosecurity success.
So if you're listening to us in your shed, tractor, or even in your kitchen while you rustle up some dinner, get comfy and stay tuned.
The world has been affected by two viruses, starting with African swine fever and more recently with the outbreak of COVID-19. But what impact have these outbreaks had on the pig industry? We caught up with Jessica Seat to find out her thoughts on these issues.
Hello, my name is Dr. Jessica Seat. I am the Global Technical Director at MSD. I'm located in Kansas in the United States.
Hi, Jessica. Why have these diseases become such an issue?
So for me, there's two different viewpoints with both of the diseases. I mean, both are very centered around fear and the unknown. For African swine fever, I look at it as more kind of a trade or disease welfare issue, but regulatory issue as well. But with COVID, it's a human health problem. It's a pandemic. And then also we're trying to find that business and economic level balance as well.
And how have these diseases affected the pig industry?
So kind of starting with more of the negative impacts that this has had, especially for COVID recently, for more of an operational side of things, we have less labor force that is available. We've got more restrictions now on our operating force. And so, you know, the government has put a lot of restrictions on what we can do and what we cannot do. There's additional costs because we have now protective equipment that needs to be provided for every employee. We have to do testing of employees, and we also have to now implement social distancing. That also makes an impact because now we can't operate at 100% capacity anymore. There's been a reduction in the packing plant capacity because of this social distancing, but also due to the fact that we are having employees coming up as positive, and so therefore they have to follow a 7 to 14 day isolation. So there's less employees that are available on the line. It's also then making producers kind of make difficult decisions. And what I mean by that is producers are now having to pursue depopulation because they have nowhere for their pigs to go. They're trying to keep them as long as they can in their barns. They're trying to move them to any open barns if possible. Some are even selling to other states where maybe they can sell them to individuals. So it has a really economic devastation and emotional toll on our producers right now.
Can you tell us what impact this has had on prices, imports, and exports?
Yep. So in terms of with prices, imports, exports, we know that we are going to lose some production. We know our sow numbers will drop. There could be some reshuffling of ownership and some consolidation of companies. It really brought to light the labor force and the packing plants. And so, and especially like in the U.S., it's not just the workers in the plant, but also our USDA employees that have to be there for the inspections, which will be the same in Europe as well, that we have our regulatory agencies there as part of the inspection process. And so we have to include them in this as well. And so plants were really shutting down due to positive cases. But here in the U.S., the government did step in and deem it critical infrastructure in fear of the disruptions to the food supply. It also really exposed our industry in a negative light to the general population because it showed how vulnerable the plant's workers are and the perception that they were in these unsafe environments. A lot of them already have to come to work and they're wearing coats and protective gloves, but they weren't necessarily wearing the face shields or the face mask unless they were on a certain part of the operating line. And so they are having to do that now. There are certain plants that have decided to test all employees. And this is across not just US or Europe, but also in Asia. That's part of the requirement, is that all employees are tested and screened. And so after they are tested, if they are positive, they're unable to work and they have to go through their 7-day at least minimum isolation. For both Asia and for US, this is really causing the plants to operate only at a 50 to 60% capacity. I know a lot of the plants are now starting to open up across the globe, so they're kind of reaching more of a 70 to 75% operation. But about 98% of the people, at least in some of the plants in the US, are testing positive. But, you know, they're not necessarily picking it up in the plant. We have to remember they're also, once they leave that plant, they're going to the grocery store or maybe to some other stores or going home. And so they're exposing themselves in other areas as well. But it was important, I thought, to note that in these plants that were testing, they were only finding about 1% or so of the population being positive. And out of that 1%, only 3 people were clinical. And the clinical signs were very mild. So that was at least important to know that we do have a lot of asymptomatic people that are essentially out and about. So to keep that in mind, some of the positive impacts that could be really that we see how fragile our food production and security is. And I think now this gave an opportunity for a lot of consumers to get a glimpse into agriculture and how complex it is and how we get food from the farm to the fork. And it's not as simple as that they probably originally thought.
What do you think the long-term implications really are for the industry?
Yeah, with the food, there's definitely going to be a food shortage. With the fact that we can only operate at 50 to 60% capacity, and that's due more to the social distance guidelines that we have in place, where they're requiring the 6 feet of distance between each employee. Well, unfortunately, with these marketing plants, they only have about 3 feet distance between one spot on the line to the next, and they don't have the capacity to really expand these lines to add in this extra 3 feet between each employee. So they can only operate with 50% of the workforce. So when you have that happening, that means less production. So the meat shortages have really been forcing a lot of grocery stores to ration certain meat products, and you'll see that in other countries as well. And we're seeing a lot of that in Asia. Also, one thing that I thought was very interesting that came up from our European colleagues was, especially like in the Netherlands, they have more automation and robots in their packing plants. So they haven't been as hindered by COVID as, say, the plants in the United States. Because of this automation, they have been able to really keep their workers safe and healthy, with the meat plant still running at about almost 100% capacity. So that's something that might be a shift in some of the plants in other regions, is thinking about more automation happening in the future in some of them. Also, I think there will be a shift in the focus of food security. You know, especially with maybe our retailers and supermarkets and how they are going to deal with this in the future, the fact that they were having to ration food. And so maybe putting more protocols or policies in place to mitigate this. They may also see a alternate protein source being pushed by, you know, some of the governments in different regions, because they've realized that they cannot count on food being imported. So I've seen that a lot in Asia. You know, now they're thinking there's going to be a large amount of surplus of certain meat products. And so where is that going to go? Nobody's willing to take it right now. So they think that, you know, they're going to definitely be seeing some shifts in that protein source. Also, you know, we think we'll be seeing some shifts in pig prices. I mean, right now we already are seeing a drop in different countries in the pig prices, and in certain countries also meat prices. They're already seeing that drop down. And so I'm hoping that at least will resolve itself over the next few years. We can come back from that. But as of right now, with the fact that we have issues with labor costs, we have issues with capacity, and then we're already seeing drops in prices. As I mentioned, it's just going to be a very heavy economic toll on our producers.
So what is your advice for pig farmers at this difficult time?
So a lot of the farms, we haven't actually seen COVID in the farm. And so we know that our biosecurity programs are really important. We know that they work, as we are very familiar with epidemics of different diseases, such as ASF, had some with PED as well. And so we're very familiar in how to do population control and then also disease reduction. And so it's important that we still continue our biosecurity programs and that we are following them as best to our abilities. Some other recommendations that, you know, if they have marketing plants, they can do whole plant testing with PCR testing if it's available. Also, you know, if they have any non-essential workers, to let them continue to work from home. Other things that, you know, producers are doing is they're really having workers only at one station at a time. And then, or they're also spreading them out, you know, through the cafeterias or where they would normally congregate, they're not allowing. Also, they're making sure they're doing the thermo scanners before entry into the plant to see if anyone has fevers. So if they do come up as positive, they will be sent back home. Also, they are making sure that they're kind of tracing workers, taking photographs of the line so that they know who is beside each other in case someone comes up positive, they know who to go to for testing and see if they have any clinical signs. And also, again, if anybody is sick, those people are to remain home and make sure that they contact to let everybody know at once. My other advice for pig farmers are, really, they need to kind of prioritize their own health and well-being. That's still got to be number one. This is a very trying time on everybody. It's very stressful. There's a lot of unknowns. And so, but we just can't forget about making sure that we stay healthy and that we stay mentally well as in addition to that, because that way we can continue to operate in a capacity where we can make a positive impact. Also, I just tell people to try to stay up to date as they can on any regulations and announcements coming from the governing agencies, national pork boards or state pork agencies, as they're providing a lot of resources to producers, especially as, for instance, in the United States, they're starting to roll out some economic relief programs. And so to be able to understand those programs or to take benefit of them, you know, they just have to be aware and act quickly on that. And so just kind of being up to date as they can. And then also they can speak with their legislators and making sure that they share the importance of agriculture and continued operations.
How long do you think the industry will take to recover?
Talking with my European colleagues, I was informed that, you know, they announced that the extent of this impact from COVID was 1.85 trillion euros. And so they know that there is no going back to normal, whatever that was before. And they believe that this could really take 5 to 10 years to recover from. And that's, you know, not understanding or knowing the future of what's going to happen. In farms, you know, there are requiring masks and temperature checks, smaller groups. Also, you know, continued biosecurity programs, as I mentioned before. But one producer mentioned to me that they really haven't made too many changes because they kept their biosecurity program as it was before. And they figured if it wasn't good enough to keep out the disease, then they weren't doing a good job. And so in terms of making some changes, you've got some people that plan to make dramatic changes and others continue to go as operation was as before.
What can we learn from these outbreaks to minimize risks in the future?
Right. Yep. Especially with COVID, it showed our vulnerability and allegiances of vertical integration and packer contracts. You know, some producers don't really know how to prepare for unknowns like COVID, other than what they're already doing, as such as their biosecurity plans in place. They look at it as it's about risk versus reward. So in terms of the economic side, you can lock in prices to ensure your bottom end, but reduce your ability to profit in the top end. In terms of African swine fever, it really comes down to biosecurity and spread of the disease and being able to control that. As we are growing globally in terms of trade, we understand the risk, and we've seen that now also with COVID, as, you know, we have increased travel, increased expansion. You know, we have a lot of companies that are expanding into other regions that were not high producers and now becoming, such as China, one of the more top producing countries. And so a lot of people are expanding their operations into that country. So we just have to be, again, aware of our, you know, procedures that we have in place to keep our food secure, but also safe. And so putting in good programs to reduce the spread and making sure, what I have found with my travels and working with colleagues in Asia, is that we need to make sure that we're providing protocols that actually can work, and we're providing the resources for them as well. Because we can have a great protocol, but if they don't have the resources available on their farms, it's not going to happen. We just have to be more aware of, you know, how things are operating in other countries, making sure that we can help them where we can in terms of resources, training, you know, additional continuing education, things like that. I think it's led us, both of these diseases have shown us our vulnerability to our industry, and the fact that COVID is more human disease related, it has made a huge impact on the industry, more so than I would say some of the other diseases or past where we've had recessions and things like that. You know, we have to kind of all work together. There's got to be a lot of communication, and hopefully we can all get through this.
Thanks, Jessica. That has given our listeners great insight into both ASF and COVID-19 and what effects they are having in the global pig business. I know our listeners will have some useful take-home messages, so thank you.
We've recently teamed up with a group of forward-thinking pig farmers to see what they are doing on farm to help grow healthy pigs. Today, we're talking to Growing Healthy Pigs ambassador Michael Baker about his biosecurity protocol across his units in Norfolk. So, Michael, what biosecurity measures do you take on your farm?
In the last 12 months, we've taken on a new yard that's got a very good wash facility in it. We've put a shower block in it for the staff as well. So when we move between our breeding herds and our finishing herds, there's a line that we cross so that we never go back towards the breeding herds from a finishing herd without coming back through the yard to wash. We don't mix staff between breeding and finishing. We've even gone to the extent of making sure we don't do that by giving the two different breeding staff and finishing staff different colour overalls so that we know if somebody's in the wrong place. And if we have a 48 hours non-pig contact before anybody can come into any of our sites, we have certain visitor protocols that we do. We meet everybody off-site, where they can fill in the appropriate paperwork that they've not been anywhere near pigs and everything. And then we change them into our gear before they come on. And we do that with all visitors and auditors and everything. We move all our own weaners from our own breeding herds. And so once our breeding herd, we move the gilts, the sows, onto our breeding herd with our own transport. And then we move the piglets off as well, so that we, if we pass something onto there in haulage, that'll be our own fault, and we find that's the best way to do it. So we transfer all our own weaners onto our finishing farms. The only time we have outside contractors come in is we have one company come to take all our finished pigs away and all our cull sows, and that's the same company.
So why did you start looking at increasing your biosecurity measures?
Swine dysentery came quite close to one of our finishing herds. So we thought we needed to do something to protect the whole business before we passed it round. And one of those was taking this yard on. And the reason we took the yard on was the very good wash facility that we had. So that make sure that anything that went backwards and forwards was washed. All our finishing staff have got own dedicated units, but they do go to other units to help out when, as the pigs get bigger, there's more work to do. But they have to completely change boots, overalls, before they move from site to site.
Brilliant. Thanks for that, Michael. That was a really great insight into what biosecurity looks like on your units.
That was our first ever episode of the Growing Healthy Pigs podcast. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time when we'll be discussing how the industry can back farm assurance schemes. Don't forget to subscribe on your chosen platform and follow us on Twitter and Facebook for regular updates on the pig industry, plus the latest tips from our farm ambassadors. See you next time. Bye for now. The Growing Healthy Pigs podcast.